Welcome to Documentary Diehards, the show where three sports fans break down one 30 for 30 documentary each and every episode. Ren Clayton, Sam Anderson, Nick Rudolph. Guys, how's it going? Are we inside away from the huge blizzard we have?
Yeah, blizzard edition here.
Blizzard edition.
It's like our Jordan flu game. We're surviving a blizzard and just making it happen regardless.
Powering through.
How are you doing, Ren?
Good. Me and Nick are getting ready to go at it in fantasy playoffs. And of course,
fierce competitors.
The timing of my roster falling apart is the worst ever. I knew this was going to happen.
Mine's falling apart to a degree, but you can't argue against Hurts going down. Potentially, I don't know if they've labeled it as official or not.
It's not official yet, but everybody pretty much sees the writing on the wall.
Get ready for Minshew Mania.
I know. I've been preparing for it because I kind of assumed he wasn't going to play like week 17, and I was hoping I would be in the final or in the semis now. But I didn't want to. I wanted to make it there. Like, It's not looking good for me right now. I'm being real.
Yeah. I mean, you'll be there in the third place game in week 17.
Yeah, okay. Also, you picked up the Titans. With your last $3, you picked up the Titans defense. And last night I was like, okay, I'm going to up my bid from $1 for the Titans to $3 because he's going to save $1 for next week. Like, you got to pick up one and then you pick that. I should have just bet it $4 because I have like $50. There's no reason for me not to. Yes, amateur move. And now, like, Titans are probably going to have at least 10 points. Like, they're playing like Houston. It's an advantage. And I didn't need
it. You love to see it.
I'm rattled.
Ryan, if you want to interview me sometime, you could figure out how to just ruin your team in, like, the middle of the season rather than have it fall apart at the end. That's usually where I like to do it early. That way I'm not heartbroken come playoffs.
The fall isn't as great.
Yeah, if you want to learn my techniques, you can give me a call whenever.
Yeah, the implosion, the early implosion versus late. Yeah, I can take some tips, I guess.
Gosh. Yeah.
Ren, I think, I don't know, I'm obviously biased, but I feel like our side of the bracket is harder than the other side. But
yeah, a little bit. Jeez. Yeah, it is.
And all because I lost this guy, Sam Anderson, Big Boo Jude, on the last play the last week by 1 point.
If I would have known what was at stake, I would have just thrown it for you, dude. But
I think you tried to. Isn't that the problem?
Yeah, I tried to, and then I scored high. That's usually how it goes. Hey, I was like the highest scoring person in our league this last week.
But you were. Right.
You were.
Consolation bracket.
I freaking hate fantasy. But we're not here to talk about that, folks. No. We're here to talk about a documentary.
We're here to talk about some player we grew up watching, Mr. Randy Moss. The documentary came out November 11th, 2014, directed by Marquise Daisy. And it is called Rand University. Not Randy, if anyone's wondering. Not Randy University. Somehow it's the weirdest coincidence of all time that he grew up in a sort of a town called Rand, and his name is Randy, and you know he's the most famous person from that whole area. Anyway, that has nothing to do with the documentary. It's just called Rand University. The documentary is about Randy Moss. It's about his basically prep career through when he's drafted, and it doesn't really cover his pro career. It talks about the controversies, his trouble with the law, his recruitment. Ultimately, he committed to Notre Dame, then FSU, and ultimately went to Marshall. It talks about kind of the struggles. And the big theme here is Rand University is literally a 7-Eleven in Rand that people basically go and drink and do drugs. And it's just kind of I don't know how to describe it. Yeah, it's a hangout where people who that are I don't know down on their luck, whatever you however you want to describe it, who they hang out there, and it's not a great scene, and they showed us that, and so that was kind of the theme, beginning and then end. It kind of starts with that, and they interview people there. They interview former star athletes that kind of got in trouble maybe, and then they ended up back in Rand and kind of didn't make the most of their athletic talent. Another theme was all the athletic talent there was coming out of that really small town in West Virginia. So it's not just a Randy Moss biography, because if it was, it would talk about his NFL career, and it wouldn't focus on a couple other athletes every once in a while that came from Rand and struggled, and it would just be about Randy. So it's not just a straight up Randy Moss documentary, though it really surrounds him and focuses on him mostly. It's kind of complicated to explain. I don't know if I'm doing a great job of it, but Sam, what did you think of it when you watched it?
I would say, I don't know if I've watched a documentary. Usually it's the other way, where we say, they could have fit a lot of this story into like 50 minutes, right? Sometimes we've been watching like an hour and 20 minute documentary, and we're like, I think it probably could have been fit into 50 minutes and I would have gotten the whole story and it would have been fine. This one, at the end, I found myself going like, wow, I wish that this was an hour and a half long, because I wish that they had gone on and talked about his career a little bit more. Because he is just such a fascinating person, and he continues to be, as an analyst for ESPN or...
Yeah, ESPN. Yeah, this was 51 minutes.
Yeah, so it was 51 minutes, and I just found myself being like, wow, this went really fast. And I think it's for a lot of different reasons. One, we grew up watching Randy Moss and idolizing him, and just thinking he was such an awesome player, but also just he's so charismatic. And so I think... I don't know about you guys, but I just found myself being like, wow, it's really awesome to see the backstory behind this. And then just the story itself of him being a high school phenom, which I'm a sucker for. Like, I love high school highlights, and his high school highlights are some of the best I've ever seen, for sure. It's up there with like Derrick Henry and just making everyone look silly. And so that was awesome. And he was interviewed in it, which made it even better. I guess I have a lot of thoughts on it, but overall I was pretty impressed with it, and just kind of wish that it was longer. And I was going to say this at some point, and maybe one of you were as well, but it reminded me a ton of the Allen Iverson documentary.
Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Yeah, the trial of Allen Iverson, and talking about this phenom who gets into some trouble in high school and kind of goes over that story, and it talks a lot about... the racial factors that went into them getting into trouble, which was a lot of what Allen Iverson's was as well. So I just wanted to make that connection quick. Rudy, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, can I just say ditto to all that? Because that's basically all my points. I mean, first off, I felt like I was watching the doc, and I was just like, man, is this on fast forward? Just because it seemed like it just was going. So much was... happening, and to your point, so much could have been talked about more. Not that the documentary did a disservice, but just more so like I was interested and wanted to learn more. I think they could easily do like a part two with Randy Moss and his like NFL career, Hall of Fame, and just like post career too, because I feel like he's, I kind of forgot some of like how controversial he was with the Vikings at times, but I feel like now he's like very much like a very charismatic person on TV. I feel like I don't know, he's grown up, but I mean, he grew up in the NFL, I'm sure too, but just like very mature, and I love like seeing his interviews nowadays. I don't know if you saw him on Peyton and Eli 2 weeks ago, but like that was very entertaining. A lot of the same stuff he said in this documentary, he said on that Peyton and Eli, because they were talking about his recruitment and stuff, and so it just like either he's a really consistent liar or he's just genuine and telling the truth. So cool to see that aspect. Funny story about that, he took one of his college visits to Tennessee. Apparently apparently Peyton Manning was late to his recruitment visit because he was visiting his girlfriend, now wife, out in Virginia because she went to Virginia or something. And so they're given, so Eli, of course, was stoking the fire in this interview, but he's like, so you didn't go to Tennessee just because Peyton was late? And so it was really funny to see him, like, you know, joking back and forth. But I just think he's a great interview. You know, in the documentary, I would have loved to see more of the mooning the Packers at Lambeau. I would have loved to see, like, straight cash, homie. You know, like all those things that I remember from my childhood inside and outside of, you know, the arena or the football field. I mean, I don't even know if they showed the Dallas Cowboys infamous like Thanksgiving game stat line where he had like three catches for an obscene amount of yards and three touchdowns or whatever.
Yeah, I
don't think they even showed that. So, yeah, just so much there that, I mean, I would be a sucker for part two if that's your wish list, you know, for later, Ren. Sorry, but that's on my wish list, I guess. And then what you were talking about with Allen Iverson, I actually thought I got their stories mixed up, right? And so I'm like expecting the story to be the Allen Iverson story. And then I'm like, oh, like, that's what happened? Like, oh, I didn't know it happened that way. And then as I'm thinking, it took me like probably 5 minutes after that point of like when they were talking about the incident of being like, oh, that was Allen Iverson, just because it was so, you know, common between the two, I felt like, too. So a lot of the same points, but yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting with the Allen Iverson thing, just how they, that whole court, you know, the judicial process was such a big aspect of this and that documentary, and the social groups that were, you know, talked about and involved during, like, I don't know, the cases, the court cases or whatever. And it's a very specific parallel between those. I hadn't thought about that when I was in that at all. But yeah, it's a good point. You guys both raised. I think it's interesting how now, like, and I think you echo what a lot of people think about Randy Moss now is, yeah, he's one of the main guys on Monday Night Football Countdown. You know, he's this great personality. Around town, like, he is known as being awful to the media, like, when he was making. Like, and it even alluded to that in the documentary, you know, and it gave actually reason for me to understand why he is known as that, because he felt, maybe rightfully so, that the media kind of dragged him when he was in West Virginia and he was getting in trouble, and you know, whether it's right or wrong, who's to say, but that was clearly a big reason why he was known as being awful to interview in the locker room and not helpful and not willing to share. And he was the best, one of the best players in the NFL when he was on the Vikings. And you know, I've talked to multiple different sports reporters about how he's like, oh yeah, now he's working in the media. This is hypocrisy. Yeah, hypocrisy, and it's like, it's frustrating for some people to see that worked and tried to cover him, and now he's, you know, but I mean, a lot of athletes are like that, but it's frustrating for sure. But it's interesting to see how he has flipped that image just because he's now on ESPN for the last 4 years, and I don't know, he's only 45, he's only been out of the league for what, like 10 years, 11 years, yeah. Just to talk about the documentary a little bit more, the structure of it, I really liked it. The actual structure, the outlook they had on it, it left me wanting more just as much as it did you guys. It at the very beginning, it gave us some quick flashes. It gave us the mooning in like 2 seconds. It gave us straight cash, homie, but it was like a little montage. And at the very end, it showed us, it was like, you know, a couple lines from the narrator saying, you know, he went out to do this, Pro Bowls, played in 2 Super Bowls, blah, 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 blah. And that was all the NFL. All we saw him in an NFL jersey was that, which is less than 60 seconds. So, yeah, obviously, there's so much that we want to see that we have seen, and it would be, you know, nostalgic to see. But I really liked how they kept it tight and short, because they specifically had this plan for this documentary. It had a very specific message in mind. It had a very specific story I wanted to tell. And I think it did a really good job of that, a really surprisingly good job to me, because at first when they introduced the story, I was a little annoyed by the narrator and some, maybe a line I thought was cheesy here and there at the beginning when they were talking about Rand University and mm-hmm. the struggles of the kind of washed up athletes, if you want to call them that. And then they, like, at the very end to wrap it up, they gave us a nice little twist by interviewing a former MLB player from Rand who was interviewed throughout, and he's struggling really hard. He's basically at Rand University, right? He breaks down crying. He could have been a, you know, a star, maybe. He could have, you know, he was successful. He smoked weed once, or got caught once smoking weed. And so it was like the epitome of the story, but the antithesis of Randy Moss, right? Because he got through all that and became one of the greatest of all time. And so I thought their theme that they did, that they started with and ended with, really fit, and it was really rewarding. It had it was a twist at the end, and then it was a satisfying conclusion because then they showed Rand at the very end. And so they did, it was almost like an essay in a way. You know, the beginning was set us up, and then it paid off in the end. And then it gave us all the Randy Moss story woven within that essay. And so that's what I liked most about it. It was really satisfying, maybe a little more niche of an approach than a typical star NFL player biography would be. But I thought it was very well done. I really liked that. I appreciate it. It wasn't like every other one.
And I think I, when I started watching it, I just assumed it, I had watched this before, but I couldn't remember what Rand University was, or that Rand University was the premise of the show. And so I had remembered that he grew up in a town, you know, like Rand's, and then that they were just calling it Rand University because he grew up there and he was, you know, such a personality in that. And so then once that, you know, theme was there throughout, it was, you know, it was just like, oh, like an aha moment for me to realize, oh, that's right. That's the, like you said, main point of this documentary.
Yeah. I was kind of wondering what the title meant too. I don't think I ever knew. So yeah, paid off over and over. Even paid off when in his last season, when he played for the 49ers, he did one of those NBC Sunday Night Football talking heads, you know, and he did, instead of Jared Allen saying Culinary Academy, he said Randy Moss, Rand University. Like the people in Rand, they made some t-shirts with that. They have signs that say that. It's like a meme almost, but it's like so convoluted because it's like, it's not a positive thing, but it's a cultural thing. It's like a community thing that's just kind of a thing everybody understands. So that was another way that they paid off and gave us a little twist. There's so many good like little things like that. I thought they're really satisfying and really kind of rounded out the documentary. The B-roll of Rand University I thought was interesting at first because as they're introducing what it is, which is, you know, they're just drinking beers and maybe smoking in the parking lot of 7-Eleven, they got B-roll of many of the people they interviewed all hanging out, and there was a bunch of Heinekens on the ground. And it was like, so how does the director pitch this? You know, how does the producer of the documentary pitch this? She's like, hey guys, are you guys gonna be there, or we'll bring the beer, or what was it? I thought that was weird. Like, first I was like, wait, are these actually the people, or did they fake this somewhere? And it wasn't, it was people with faces.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
That was odd. But huh. It just makes it more real. It's like, oh yeah, shoot, they're here. It's, you know, it's a real thing that still exists. I don't know.
That interview that you're talking about of his former teammate who got drafted in the 7th round and then ended up, you know, back at Rand University, I think that was the most powerful part of the whole doc. I don't know if you guys would agree, but like the goosebump moment, which we haven't done in a long time, I definitely think it goes to that scene, him just talking about it and breaking down on camera and basically just saying like, I can't even do this interview anymore. I thought it just was perfect way to end, like you said, Ren, where it kind of just shows like how delicate of a situation it was, and that Randy Moss, for every Randy Moss, there's 100 people, like I'm forgetting his name, but there's 100 people who mess up and don't get a second or a third chance, and Randy Moss just happened to be so talented and take advantage, and he worked really hard, obviously, and ended up making it, but a lot of more people don't end up making it in those situations. And it was just a very powerful part to be like, oh, they started from the same spot and ended up in completely different spots.
Totally agree. And that was kind of the thesis of the whole thing, right? And I think can't be overemphasized how how well that was done, that moment, because you can gather that moment, but it's hard to make everything lead up to that and not be gimmicky and also have a good reveal while still having talked to this guy. Like, they did it really well where we knew who he was, but we didn't know who he was. We didn't know his full story, but we knew he was like at Rand University, and then it paid off and he started crying. So it was really deftly done, that moment especially, which really probably, you know, boosted the rating up for most of us at least a few points in that moment alone.
Well, and then you got Randy Moss to even mention that too. And I think the quote that hit me was, he's like, you know, a lot of people go down a road and then they have a choice and they take a left or a right. And I took a right, but I almost took a left. And you know, that's just the epitome of the, you know, the whole theme, like you were saying, yeah. Like, he was almost down that road too. But he had the second, third, fourth chance and was like ultimately able to take advantage of that.
Yeah, that's a perfect example of them just emphasizing their thesis and in a unique way. Yeah, that's a great point. I thought overall, like, the production of it, like I kind of alluded to already, there was so much good high school highlights, so much good video that they got from local news, I'm sure. So good, so satisfying, and super fun to watch, and just bawling out.
Good. Oh. What he just is returning punts and all of that stuff, mossing people before we, like, we know Moss is like, or what is it called? Getting mossed or whatever. Yeah,
you got mossed.
You got mossed. We know him just going up over the top of everyone. And this is like him going over the top of people that are a foot shorter than him. And it was amazing.
Oh, yeah. I also like, this kind of was apropos of nothing, but like he randomly talked about it in his interview how nowadays people are taught to catch it with their hands, and they kept showing these videos of him kind of, you know, catching it with his body doing, and he was like, I was just told to catch it however. But that's interesting because I was noticing that, like, when we're seeing all these highlights, most of them aren't the typical, you know, hand, like you see a receiver fundamentally doing now. A lot of them with the basket, yeah, exactly, the body, in the end zone, you just go up and kind of, and you guys all remember when he played for the Vikings, a lot of his catches were like that. Right? Catch it up against his chest. And that didn't fit the theme, but that was like super fascinating to just hear him talk about that first.
Yeah.
Second. It's interesting because Mike Maxx did a story with him. He sat down with him at his house, or one of his houses in Minnesota. I think he has a house here. I'm not sure if he lives here. He might part time. But he did a story with him, like, I want to say the beginning, like, training camp this year. And it was interesting to see that too, because he was removed and they just kind of talked about his evolution once he retired, and now he wants to do media sometimes, and they broached that subject a little bit. And so it was interesting to see, kind of compare that from what I remembered of that interview to what we watched tonight. And just kind of see how he presents himself now, which, yeah, I mean, he's always been like that charismatic guy, right? But he's never been like super friendly. You wouldn't call him like friendly when he was like in the NFL, but he was super charismatic and he was doing all this fun stuff. You know, the moon was an iconic, super fun thing. It's so easy to root for and all kind of thing. So it's just, his evolution is very interesting. Quickly, do you guys know which teams he played for? I just looked it up. There's probably more than you think.
All right. We're going Vikings, Raiders, Patriots, Titans, Vikings, 49ers. Is there one more?
That's all of them. Nailed it. Wow. I thought Titans was going to get you.
Yeah, I forgot about the Titans. I only knew the 49ers because of the docs. So.
Right.
Yeah. And so the second stint with the Vikings was like a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it was 2010. So he got traded from the Patriots to the Vikings in 2010. Was there like a month. Then waived, then Titans got him. And then he sat out a year because no one wanted him. And then he played one last year with the Niners in 2012. So 10 years ago was when he retired.
I remember him returning to the Vikings. And of course, you know, like, so much promise for like your childhood hero or like football hero, at least coming back. And then nothing came of that. I was trying to remember what led to his departure from the Vikings. And so so reading like from Wikipedia, but it's funny because I remember it too. And so less than 4 weeks after being traded to Minnesota, Childress told Vikings team players or players in a team meeting that Moss was going to be waived by the team one day after Moss criticized Childress and teammates after the Vikings lost to the Patriots. Just before the press conference, Moss reportedly told team owner Ziggy Wolf that Childress was unfit to be an NFL head coach and he should be fired. Ziggy Wolf reportedly considered firing Childress just to keep Moss, but officially Moss was waived the next day. And then Childress was fired on November 22nd.
So they should have kept Moss.
So he was accurate.
Wow. That's awesome.
So they fired Childress, what, 3 weeks after?
That's crazy.
Wonder for some reason,
I thought I remember something with a cafeteria and like Moss criticizing our cafeteria or something like that. But
I'll have to do more research.
Probably right. I didn't know that he was going to go to Notre Dame. I didn't know he was committed there. Lou Holtz's Notre Dame team. I had no idea. I thought it was cool and interesting that when the Notre Dame decided he wasn't going to be allowed to go there because of his arrest, Lou Holtz basically was like, okay, I got two friends in coaching that I think you should go. And he's like, he basically just handed him over on a silver platter to FSU. And it was just because, yeah, Bobby Bowden and FSU, like, that's such a, like, a weird thing to do as a coach, to, like, give it to someone who you might play.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, one of the best players in the prospects. It was interesting.
So his final three was Notre Dame, Tennessee, and Florida?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then wasn't the two coaches that Lou Holtz said was Florida State and Florida?
I think he said, was he at Florida at the time?
I don't know who the other coach was.
I think it was Steve Spurrier, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought so. Anyways, it's interesting that he didn't choose Florida if he was already recruiting them, but
yeah,
or looking at them.
But. And then he ended up playing for a former assistant coach at Florida, who was then head coaching Marshall.
Yeah.
Interesting. Did he only play 1 year at Marshall? Did I miss that, or was it two?
Two.
Two.
Okay. Two. Yeah, because he couldn't go out after.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just really interesting to think about, because Notre Dame just doesn't seem like a school that Randy Moss would go to, because when you think of Notre Dame, you think of just like very team-oriented. Everything's about the team. It's not about the individual. At least that's what I think. And Randy Moss is like clearly not that, just because he's so talented and charismatic, like we talked about already, and just has so much personality that he always stood out no matter what team he was on, even like the 07 Patriots. It's like, oh, that's Randy Moss. But so just picture him as it like a team oriented. It's all about the team, Notre Dame, Fighting Irish, and not as an individual is very interesting to me.
Yeah, it doesn't really fit. At least my impression, I guess.
Yeah, same.
I like how we got Chad Pennington just popping up as the Marshall quarterback. Like, what?
Yeah.
Remember the Jets when we were kids? That's
my crazy. Yeah, my mind like blew when that happened. I was like, wait, what?
There's and then so many.
Immediately thinking how Randy Moss basically got him an NFL contract.
I remember him struggling for the Jets, you know, from what I knew of him. But it's so crazy, those like almost every documentary, there's like a teammate that played with this guy then, and we're like, what? We're shocked. And like every other documentary, there's someone like Chad Pennington popping up in a Randy Moss documentary.
Fun fact about Chad Pennington that I heard on a podcast a couple weeks ago: he won comeback player of the year 2 out of 3 years at one point.
In the NFL?
Yeah, in the NFL.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? Because he had a lot of shoulder issues, I guess. But
dang, that's hard to do. Very hard to do.
Yeah.
Did Alex Smith win two? I feel like he won two. Didn't he win one with the Washington, and then before that when he was with the Chiefs?
With the Niners. Oh, with the Chiefs.
I think after he left the Niners, and then went to the Chiefs. That was like a struggle, and then he overcame that feeling, I think.
I'll look it up.
But it probably wasn't a 3-year span, but it definitely wasn't. But what else did I want to say? I think that's pretty much all I had on the documentary. I liked it overall, as I've said. Anything else that we needed to touch on before we go to a rating?
I don't think so.
All right.
I don't think Alex Smith won it with the Chiefs, just so you know. He won it in 2020 with the Washington football team. The last 5 years, Keenan Allen, Andrew Luck, Jimmy Garoppolo, Alex Smith, Joe Burrow.
That's actually a low-key, like, a really interesting award to track like that, like, to look back on. Because it's surprising names, and it's never the best player in the league. Yeah, interesting. Anyways, Nick, do you have a rating for us?
I do. Well, I have a preliminary rating, but I'm looking at my rankings right now. So, yeah, I really liked it. You know, wish it could have been longer. But is that a detriment, I guess? Not really. Yeah, just overall liked it a lot. I'm going to go with 8.8.
Wow.
Butt moons.
8.8 what?
Butt moons. Or like moons of the crowd.
Yeah. All right, Ren, what are you going with?
I'm probably lower than it sounds like I would be from my wife Ray's. I'm going 7.25 Denny Green impressions. Because Randy Moss did a nice little impression of him on the phone. And we all know Denny Green's voice. So that was funny. 7.25, I don't know if I have a great justification for not going in eights, just because it was just really comparing it to other ones. All the ones in the sevens to me, I like. And so it's just hard. Maybe because of the breadth of this, the you know, it isn't that wide. Maybe that's why I didn't think it was maybe the level of difficulty. I don't know. I guess I would have liked more Randy Moss sit down interview moments where we're getting something really good from Randy Moss himself. There was some, obviously, but he probably just didn't give many. But, like, maybe that would have made it just more profound, a higher rating for me. But overall, yeah, I thought it was well executed in most every way. So.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I have it ranked high. I gave it an 8.36. Big gulps, because big gulps is what I think about when I think of, like, gas stations or hangouts, I guess.
Yeah.
7-Elevens. yeah, I really enjoyed it. I can't wait. I feel like there's going to be more Randy Moss documentaries in the future. Like, I feel like this isn't going to be it. Probably.
Because now they sign on with ESPN. Like, they want that money, and it'll make it easily.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, his pro career is worth it, and the fact that you could add all of this to that would you know, a three-parter would be awesome. I liked it more than the Allen Iverson doc. I remember when we watched the Allen Iverson doc, the narrator, the thing I didn't like about it was the narrator played a big role in it. If you remember, he like grew up in the town that Allen Iverson did, and he like featured himself a lot in the interviews and stuff like that. And I remember not liking that aspect of it. So I really liked how this one was presented. And Ren, you kind of sold it to me as an essay. Like when you explained it, I was like, wow, that is very true. And yeah, it was great. The Randy Moss interviews were awesome, and just the fact that they got so many amazing interviews from people who are from Rand or, you know, are at Rand University right now. It was a pretty emotional end, and so 8.36 for me, which brings the total to
probably around 8.3, right? It's got to be right around there.
Yeah, 8.2. Probably.
8.14.
That's pretty good. That's probably top 20 easily.
Yeah.
So I don't have it exactly updated yet, but it looks like it is probably 13th.
Oh shoot! It's not often we get back-to-back top 15 or
right
documentaries.
One thing I didn't consider. So if you go back to like Randy Moss's draft. You remember he was like all about the Cowboys and they had given him indications that they were going to draft him and then ended up not drafting him. And then you think back to his Thanksgiving Day, like three receptions for 150 yards or whatever and three touchdowns against the Cowboys. Like, yeah. I never put that together until this documentary, until now.
Good point.
Jerry Jones mistake.
Mm-hmm.
How many guys do you think Jerry Jones, like in that class or any given class, says, yeah, we're going to take you, bud? He probably said it to everybody.
And now he probably does it more because he has dementia probably by now.
He's not my favorite person on earth. So.
I mean, I remember hearing stories about Johnny Manziel too. And like Dallas has to draft Johnny Manziel and that he wanted to. But then like everyone else in the building was like, no, we're going to draft Zach Martin instead. And now Zach Martin's like the best lineman in the last decade. And Johnny Manziel is doing Johnny Manziel.
Doing him. Very good. Nice little Minnesota connection for us on a very Minnesota day where it's snowing like 8 inches. I'm just looking outside. The Capella Tower is purple and gold already. Usually they do that right before Vikings game, but maybe it's in honor of Randy Moss and us doing this.
I think it has to be.
That's actually great. Anyway, let's move on to Mount Rushmore. We're going to keep on the wide receiver theme. We're doing current wide receivers. We're going to build our best four from, you know, basically 2022 wide receivers. So the best current playing wide receivers in this moment in time. And we're going to draft our favorite four. I don't know who goes first. Let's see here.
Nick goes first.
Nick goes first. All right.
Randy Moss 2.0. Let's go. Justin Randy. Jefferson.
Okay. Yeah, easy, right?
Yeah, that's an easy pick. I'm pretty sad I wasn't the first pick here.
I'm really unprepared for this. So I think Sam goes next, but I don't know who I'm going to take three, honestly.
Oh, Ryan, you're next.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay. Then I think I know. Let me confirm who I want. Oh, gosh, now there's another guy I want. I'm going to go Stephon Diggs. Undersized, but I mean, he's one of the top. I mean, I guess I think he's top two receiver, so I'm taking two.
I was thinking about that, and I think I always want to discount Diggs, but then he's like so small. Like that's not a character flaw, right? Like being small, like you have to be better in order to be as good as he is, if that makes sense, what I'm trying to say. Like he doesn't have the physical gifts like a larger receiver, and so he plays in a different way, and that's not that he can't be as good, but he just has to be a different way of being good, if that makes sense.
Fair. And he had to overcome that, which doesn't necessarily mean he's better. It just means it's just an interesting factor. But yeah, I see what you're saying. Sam.
All right. I'll go with the guy who was leading my fantasy team until he got hurt. Ja'Marr Chase. Love watching him play. He's just one of those guys that can take it to the house at any time or go up and get it, moss somebody at any point. Definitely awesome. I probably would have taken him over Stephon Diggs, but that's just me. And then next pick, I think I'll go Davante Adams here. Just so reliable, awesome route runner. You know, not being with Aaron Rodgers hurts, but he's still like being fairly productive and still a leader in yards. And I think it'll only get better with Derek Carr if Derek Carr is the quarterback next year. So I'll go with Davante Adams.
He's dead to me after he got that long touchdown to chop me and Nick from our guillotine league. Done with Davante Adams. Out on him. Salty.
Watch.
Okay.
Rest in peace, Ren and Sam.
Man, it was probably our team name, honestly, that cost us. It was so uninspired.
Yeah, gotta come up with something better.
Right, we're gonna win it all next year.
Oh man.
Ren's like, I don't want to be on the team with this guy.
Yeah. We gotta run it back. Get our revenge.
All right, Red, who are you going with? Who's he pairing with Stephon Diggs here?
I'm going to go. You guys aren't going to like this pick, I don't think. But I'm going to go A.J. Brown.
I knew you were going to go with AJ.
Yeah. I mean,
he's a fantasy bias.
Yeah. he's one of, I mean, I paired him up with Jalen Hurts and I'm riding to the top seed in our fantasy playoffs. He's a stud and maybe he's not as highly considered because he's struggled under the yoke of the terrible, horrible, messed up Titans passing game for so many years. And now he has a good passing game and he's one of the best. So, and he's got the size. So now I got a big guy and a small guy.
There you go.
All right, me for two.
I think you just hated on him last week, but I think we know who you got to take. One of these picks.
Who I just hated on last week.
I think you mentioned hating him for his troubles with the law.
Well, Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to wait for him until the third He's round. Right? Fantasy. It's fantasy biased. I'm going to go with Cooper Kupp.
I'll just take Matt Prater then.
Matt Prater.
He'd be a great receiver. They just don't put him out there. Cooper Kupp first.
Honestly, forgot about him.
Yeah. Assuming we're not like, oh, making our team to win the Super Bowl type of a thing, but just like in the current age, you know, injuries aside.
Yeah, injuries don't count.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you got to list him there. And then I'd probably go the POS that is Tyreek Hill.
I knew it.
All right. Team's shaping up here.
I'm literally looking at ESPN app, the standings, and I'm just going, like, thinking who their best receiver is.
I'm on the stats, and I'm looking at top receiving yards.
See, I feel like that was going to lead me astray because they're like, maybe there'd be someone that wasn't there, and so I was worried about that.
It's it drops off quickly with that, I feel like. Sam, do you agree?
Yes,
definitely. Like, I feel like the top five, I'm like, oh, yeah, like, for sure, and then I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden you're at, like, I don't know. I mean, it kind of depends how you feel about him, I guess. But, like, yeah. CeeDee Lamb, do you think he's a top 12 receiver in the league? Probably not. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm going to have to – I'm going between two. I'm going to go with
– CeeDee Lamb and – I'm just kidding. Who? I said CeeDee Lamb and who else?
Oh, yeah, CeeDee Lamb and – that was actually it. No, I'm going to do Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Fantasy bias.
Yeah, he's on both my fantasy teams carrying me. But I mean, he's killing it, right? He's, you know, came up out of nowhere end of last year and picked up right where he left off. Yeah, he's killing it. Gets so many catches, yards. And I picked him over the other guy who I won't mention yet, but just because the other guy's on the tail end of his career, but I still think he's one of the best. So, yeah, I'm going to Ross St. Brown.
Good pick. That was probably going to be my next pick, honestly.
Yes.
Man, that gets tough. That gets really tough. Oh, this is easy. Debo Samuel, baby. I forgot about Debo.
Yeah, that's a good pick. I did too, honestly.
I'll take him third. He wasn't on the list I was looking at, but I just thought of it. Awesome dual threat, can be a running back if you need him to be. Take it to the house whenever you want. Last pick, I think I'm just gonna go with DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, he's getting a little bit old, but still produces, still reliable, still a Hall of Famer. I'll go with D-Hop.
Yeah, that's who I was talking about. That's I was going between. He's still really good, and he probably wasn't on our list because he was suspended for a lot of this year. But okay.
I mean, he's still – I mean, that's not super high. He's 31st in receiving yards, even though he missed, what, 6 weeks?
Wow.
So that's not bad.
I think he's 6 overall if you look at yards per game.
Yards per game, yeah.
So right up there.
Oh, yeah, wow. All right, man, bring us
– yeah, my turn. Shoot. I'm going to go Terry McLaurin, I guess. I mean, just named to the Pro Bowl today. He's unsung because he plays for Washington. They don't have a good quarterback ever. But he's good. Maybe a little undersized, too, I think. But I think my team's good. I like him rounding it out.
Your whole receiving group is undersized, Ren.
No, it's not.
Oh, wait, Amon-Ra is pretty big, isn't he?
Yeah, and AJ, too. Oh. AJ's huge, I think, isn't he?
He's short, but he's freaking massive.
Oh, I thought he was tall.
Maybe just standing next to DK Metcalf, he was short. I'm going to say 6'2".
I was going to say 6'4 before you said that, so I will stick with 6'4".
All right, let's find out.
Meanwhile, I think one left, Nick.
6'1".
Dang, really? Really?
Yeah, well, he's shorter than you think. He's so muscular that he just plays big, I feel like.
Yeah. I really thought he was like one of those super tall guys, but yeah. All right. Nick.
Jeez, I don't really
need some honorable mentions after this.
Yeah. Let me look at my team here. What about a veteran like Keenan Allen?
I was just thinking about him. Yeah.
I was debating between him and someone like DK, but yeah. I think the body of work and just a target hog, you know, that he has always been.
I like it.
All right. Nick, first overall, went with Justin Jefferson, then Cooper Kupp, Tyreek Hill, and DK Metcalf.
That's stacked.
That is stacked.
Except Ren, for Metcalf, like, yeah.
Ren, Stephon Diggs, AJ Brown, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and Terry McLaurin. And I went with Jamar Chase, Davante Adams, Deebo Samuel, and DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, I guess I think my team's probably not the least star power. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, yours is the worst one.
Yeah. Okay, honorable mentions. I obviously, what's his name? Lamb. Chris Godwin, I thought about him for a minute. I like him a lot.
There's Chris Olave.
Sure.
And awesome. Garrett Wilson.
I was about to say him, yeah.
Ohio State.
Key Higgins. Definitely worth a mention, I think.
Who else?
Yeah, because if, you know, like when Jamar was out, you know, T. Higgins was a, you know, very good fill-in or, you know, transitioning to the number one.
For sure.
Pretty much it, as far as considerations with us. There's other ones, but Travis Kelce, yeah.
I mean, you got like Amari Cooper and Mike Evans who are like consistently, they're injured a lot, but they produce pretty consistently.
Does Evans anymore though? I mean, he used to.
I mean, I think he's had 1,000 yards every year of his career, except this year. Is he gonna? I don't know. I mean, he's got 888.
It's probably.
Yeah.
Oh, Waddle, maybe consideration.
Oh, for sure.
Okay, cool. That was good. Okay, I'm going to do a quick doc wish list, top of mind subject. This feels like one that I might have suggested earlier. I don't think I did, but it's just even more. Oh, we lost Sam again. This has happened now twice in a 2 weeks in a row. He'll be back, maybe, before we end. But I'm going to do a documentary wish list on Carlos Correa. I mean, he's had such a off-the-field weird career, to say the least. And then once it's all said and done, he's going to be a Hall of Famer, probably. You know, he's amazing, very, very charismatic, great at interviews. So, like, you got that going for you when you make the documentary. It'll be a great sit-down interview, and you probably walk around with him, his family. You know, he loves talking about other stuff. He's like, loves Star Wars, weird, and like, not weird, but I love Star Wars, but like, just. He has other interests that he talks about. And then obviously the cheating scandal in Houston when they won the World Series, that's a major aspect of his story. And then, you know, his free agency this year that we just last night, overnight, he switched from going to the Giants for $350 million. And then Sam's back. And then now he's a New York Met and making almost as much, but not quite, because of an injury drama, pending physical issues.
Crazy.
So yeah, I mean, Carlos Correa, it writes itself pretty much, and I think it'd be a great topic. And in an alternate universe, maybe he was with the Twins for the rest of his career. I don't know. No, he was never going to be. Let's be
it's
real.
A different dimension, Ren.
Yeah. But also, one last thing about him is that he's probably going to play third base now, which I tweeted it. It's a travesty. He should never play third base, at least in his prime like this. He should never play anything but shortstop. Problem is, they have another guy who is at their shortstop long term who should never play anywhere but shortstop either, Francisco Lindor. So it's sad that they have to two of the best shortstops in the game are on the same team. For me as a baseball fan, like, I want to see them play shortstop. Like, Correa arguably is more valued at defense than in the batter's box, and he's going to now stand at third. It's disappointing. And the Mets are insane with their spending this year, but it's the way of the world now.
I saw that $800 million total.
Yeah.
Who else did they sign?
Justin Verlander. Other people. There's so many. I can't think now. But Verlander's the headliner besides Correa. There's so many other ones. But, yeah, they've spent so much money. And that could be an aspect of the doc, too, is, like, he was at the front lines of the historic spending by far of a Major League Baseball team in 2022. Anything else, guys, before we say goodbye?
Yes, I have one more thing. I listened to a podcast. It's called Plain English. Have you heard of it?
No.
It's on The Ringer. They talk about a wide variety of topics, but he just reshared one. He's like, end of the year, I'm going to share one of my most popular episodes. And so I listened to it, and it's him and Ryan Russillo. I forget the host's name. Him and Ryan Russillo, though, are talking about all-time sports records. And they're kind of like debating what are the all-time, like, the most impressive all-time sports records. And I think you guys would enjoy the conversation. So I recommend it to you, but I just thought of it because Justin Verlander was mentioned because Satchel Paige has like 511 career wins or something. And I think the next closest one was like in the 400s, and only one other person's in the 400s. And then Justin Verlander is like 262 or something. And he's been playing at a high level for so long, but he's got like half the wins. And yeah. So but I just thought of that when you mentioned Justin Verlander. I was like, it's just an awesome podcast as far as just as a sports nerd. You guys will like it.
Yeah. So. Oh, sounds – I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, sports records that are – I mean, there's ones that are, you know, in certain eras that because the game's changed now, they won't change – they won't be broken. Really? Or there's other ones that, like, will never – like, never lasted because of the game changing.
Mm-hmm. They two of them I want to mention. We talked about one on our very first podcast, and that's the Wayne Gretzky. I think it was our very first podcast, right?
Yeah.
Wayne Gretzky's records are like by far the craziest. The fact that he could have never scored a goal in the NHL and would still be the all-time points leader because he had that many assists is wild. Also, they compared in this podcast, they compared how far the second place person is away from him in as far as points go to in the NBA, Kareem is first and Karl Malone is second. And they're like relatively close, but the difference is you would have to take 11,000 points away from Karl Malone. That's the same percentage that the second person is compared to Wayne.
You normalize it. Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that wild?
That's crazy. And I think Ovechkin is creeping up on Gretzky in goals. So that just speaks to how Wayne is so far ahead in both categories, assists and goals.
Yeah. And talked about how impressive that is. Cause it's not like it was that long ago where, you know, like the Babe Ruth era, it's like, oh, okay, you were playing in a different era.
Right.
Where like Wayne Gretzky, obviously it's a little bit of a different era, but there's still like competitive NHL hockey.
Yeah. So. Probably look that up. That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, thanks for doing it, guys. Fun one. We'll be back probably after the holiday. Well, definitely after Christmas because it's almost here. Yeah. See ya.
Full bikes.